Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and you wonder, are banks really manipulating the bond market? And why would they do that? Or maybe they're just really good at playing the long game. We've got that. We've got the Powell presser. We're going to dig into the economic data this week and find out, are higher interest rates being absorbed? Are we really seeing inflation? Or is the economic data saying consumers are rejecting that? I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me on the St. Patrick's Day edition. And since the only thing I have green are these emeralds on my crown? We'll wear the crown for the entire episode. All right, so let's talk about the banks. What's going on with them? You know, we've talked about this SLR thing, and I think my initial view of it was right. And then I kind of got swayed a little bit by some experts because they said there's going to be this big, massive bond selling, and we went over it, and I kept saying I don't see it, but okay. And you kind of remember my view was maybe they need to extend this thing, and now my view is I hope they don't. Because I don't think it works the way anyone thinks. Or if they do, it's deliberately done to play the long game. And I think banks want so many bonds right now, they're convincing everyone to sell them. I mean, think about what's gone on over the last year, right? We've got, you know, inflation headlines, stimulus headlines, right? Both of those, higher interest rates, massive demand. And then we've got the SLRs coming, you know, the looming SLR, and they're going to, you know, not extend the exemption. And that's going to be, you know, dumping of hundreds of billions worth of bonds. And yet, I don't see that. So why is all this going on? Why are the banks so desperate? Well, let's set the stage a little bit. First of all, as we talk about the SLR, here is a piece. Warren and Brown urge regulators reverse rule that weakens capital requirements and makes banks more vulnerable to collapse during the crisis. And they said, we are baffled that the federal financial regulators granted a long-desired piece of deregulation to the nation's largest banks without sufficient jurisdiction to do so, and despite the risk to the economic growth and financial stability. And that was written by, you know, Senator Elizabeth Warren, and she is the ranking member of the Senate Banking Committee. That tells you quite a bit. And Senator Sherrod Brown, also a ranking member of the Senate Banking Committee. Now, what is it they know? Why do they want this thing back so bad? Because there's some other things that don't make sense. If interest rates were really going up, why are banks, and we've looked at this, saying these massive speculative short positions on the long bond? And you got to remember, when the banks were taking these long positions, if you go and look at, say, TLT, it was trading up in the 150s to 170s. Way higher than it is now. Why would the banks be taking a long futures contract? And if you don't know what that means, it means they were locking in that price because they think the price is going to go higher. They actually want to take those contracts and execute them at a higher price. So they thought, and still do, the prices are going higher. What about primary dealers? Everyone's kind of made a big deal. Oh, they've sold, right? We talked what possibly that could be. But if interest rates were going up, why are primary dealers sitting on all these bonds? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. They don't have to. They could just dump them. And you remember that guy, Zoltan Prosser, we talked about? And he said, oh, yeah, this thing is definitely, this SLR thing, yeah, it's going to really be a problem. Well, yesterday at market close, he releases a report. Here you can see the 16th of March. And he says the SLR exemption ends on March 31st. It won't lead to forced sales. Neither will it cause a constraint in the functioning of the Treasury repo market. Remember before, some of you sent me this article, we talked about this being a possibility, and he was a big proponent. This was going to lead to selling, and he said, you'll see nothing's going to change, nothing, you know, and we are baffled why strategists make that claim, especially since all the advent of sponsored repo has not affected the holding company SLR. So he's pretty much saying, look, that's not going to lead to selling. And then remember, we looked at this chart too. This is a 30-year treasury yield from the implementation of the SLR to the exemption. And if it was going to lead to massive bond selling and higher interest rates, well, it was flat along here, and then they went down. Well, that doesn't make any sense. And if they were leading to massive bond selling, wouldn't, you know, the non-mortgage back or U.S. Treasury position and all commercial banks, wouldn't it be going down over that same period? Well, it went up by $300 billion. So something doesn't add up here. So what is it? What happened? And why did the Fed do this? So we go back to the pandemic in March. What was the problem? Liquidity dried up. and corporations were going to pull massive amounts of money from their credit revolvers. And the Fed would know this. And if you're like, well, how would the Fed know this? Well, because the regional Fed banks, right, they have presence and their job is to communicate with the large corporations in their area, in their region. So they would know, because they would get a call and say, hey, you know, we're about to pull, you know, $200 million on our credit line. We're just making sure that when we go to our bank, it's there. They're going to let the Fed know that, hey, we're going to do this stuff. The problem is the banks, well, they weren't really set up for that. Because if you go back to the great financial crisis now, and you remember the banks took all the blame, right? It was all the banks' fault for all these, you know, bad mortgages and all that stuff that they did, and they caused the crisis. So what did the Basel III regulations do? I mean, because remember, we had Basel I and II, now we have Basel III. It was, look, we need to make sure the banks don't do risky stuff, and we're going to control their size. And we're going to make sure that they can't do risky stuff by penalizing them for getting bigger. In fact, we're going to incentivize them to get smaller. And what do you do if you're going to, as a regulator, if you want a bank to be less risky, right? You're going to say fewer loans and more high-quality liquid assets. And so what happened is banks started becoming a dumping ground for bonds, for government bonds. Because all of these regulators realized that, look, you remember what happened in the aftermath of the great financial crisis? What happened to the banking system? Did anyone go to jail? If you watched the movie The Big Short, one guy went to jail and he wasn't even a major player in the situation. One banker. The taxpayers bailed out the banks and the executives paid themselves gigantic bonuses. Now, that wasn't really popular and you can't really do that again. So how do you solve that problem with the banks in case there's another crisis without going to the taxpayer? Well, you load them up with government debt, because what do the central bankers around the world have the absolute authority to do at any time without, you know, going to their government, or in our case to Congress, is they can buy an unlimited amount of U.S. treasuries. They can through quantitative easing. That's what they can do. The other problem is governments knew that they needed a dumping ground for all of this debt because, well, they were going to run larger deficits. So they effectively said, hey, banking system, you're really bad. And because you're so bad, we're going to impose new regulations on you, and you're going to have to buy a whole bunch of treasury securities. And oh, by the way, if things really go wrong, we're going to use those same treasury securities to bail you out. So that way we don't have to go to the taxpayer. And the taxpayer loves seeing anything that's called QE that involves a Fed buying treasury securities. Sounded like a winning deal, and the bank said fine. So now let's look at what happened with the SLR. And we're going to go back to this. We've looked at this before, but we're going to go a little deeper into it, right? So we can see back on March 31st, the Fed announced a temporary change to the SLR rule. The change would exclude U.S. Treasury securities and deposits at Federal Reserve Bank from the calculation of the rule. Keyword, holding companies, which Zoltan Pozsar later kind of commented in his piece that, holding companies really aren't going to be selling anything. And this is going to stay in effect till March 31st, 2021. Now, why did they do this? Well, simple, liquidity conditions in treasury markets have deteriorated rapidly, and financial institutions are receiving significant inflows of customer deposits from stimulus, along with increased reserve levels. The regulatory restrictions that accompany this balance sheet growth may constrain the firm's ability to continue to serve as a financial intermediary or lender and to provide credit to households and businesses who are going to be pulling their credit revolvers like you've never seen in your life. The change to the SLR ratio will mitigate these effects of those restrictions and better enable the firms to support the economy. Simply translated, we need the banks to actually lend. So we got to take some of this regulation back. So let's keep going here. The board is providing temporary exclusion in the interim final rule to allow banks to expand their balance sheets as appropriate to continue to serve as financial mediaries, actually as lenders rather than dumping grounds for bonds, rather than allow the banking organizations to increase their capital distributions. And we, you know, so effectively no share buybacks, no stock purchases, none of that junk. And then let's continue down here. The supplementary leverage ratio generally applies to large financial institutions. It requires them to hold a minimum ratio of 3%. Measured against their total leverage exposure, with more stringent requirements for the largest and most systemic financial institutions. This change would temporarily decrease Tier 1 capital requirements of holding companies by approximately 2% in aggregate. Now, what's key is up here is the banks had a lot of assets, right? They have a lot of, the capital, right? Customer deposits. And so all these regulations, right? What do they tell the banks to do? You've got to hold, you know, so many treasury securities or against this stuff. That's how you're going to be safe. And so when the pandemic hit and companies needed to pull their credit revolver, look, the banks have been choosing. If there's a path, take the risky path or the least risky path, they've lately taken, you know, for years now, since the pandemic or since the great financial crisis, they've taken the path, the least risky path. De-risk, you know, don't cause a scene, just take that path. So why would the banks want to start lending during a pandemic to companies that they didn't know going to be around much longer? And the answer is they didn't want to. Why would they? But the Fed had a problem. The companies wanted to lend to stay in business. Banks didn't want to lend because we gave them all these regulations. So how do you fix the problem if you're the Fed? You got to get money into the banks and you got to ease the restrictions. So what did they do? They said, okay, hey, banks, you know those treasury securities and deposits? We're going to exclude those from this formula. Now, why would you exclude that and then later reduce their, at the same time, reduce what they have to hold? You know, it requires a minimum ratio of 3%. And now we're going to drop it to 1. So we're here. CSC change with temporary decrease by 2%. So why would they do that? Well, if you have a regulation that requires you to do something and that regulation goes away, you can get rid of it. So in this case, instead of taking that capital that banks have that they're doing nothing with, but buying treasury securities and more treasury securities because of all the regulation they're imposed upon, the Feds now says, look, now you don't have to have those treasury securities there. You're free from that, which means we want you to lend against that capital. And if you don't have the money, we will also do $1 trillion in QE. Now you're like, why? Remember back then, why were they doing $1 trillion of QE? Everyone thought it was to save the stock market. No, it was to save, this get cash into the banks. So they said, look, you feel free to sell what you need to sell because we're going to be buying it. Now, let's take a look at the Federal Register, which has a more detail on this. And we're going to go dig around in here. And we're going to see that in light of the proposed exclusion under this rule, this temporary reduction in capital requirements is expected to increase leverage exposure capacity to holding companies by $1.6 trillion. There's the reason the Fed was doing $1 trillion in QE and exempting treasuries and reserve assets from the SLR. Banks, sell your treasuries if you need cash and start lending. We're going to be there. In particular, the board expects this increase in leverage exposure capacity will facilitate intermediation by broker-dealer subsidies and banking holding companies and therefore increase liquidity in stressed financial markets. Similarly, the board expects an increase in leverage exposure capacity will facilitate increases in customer deposits at banking organizations subject to the interim final rule. Now, why does it mean it facilitate customer deposits? Because the banks wouldn't have to buy a bunch of extra bonds. See? And therefore, ensure banking organizations remain stable. Aside from increases in balance sheets caused by recent volatility in treasury markets, balance sheets of banking organizations have also increased as households and businesses draw down credit lines, bingo, and customer deposits increase. If holding companies become constrained by the SLR rule, this could adversely affect their ability to intermediate or lend financial markets and hamper their ability to provide lines of credit to households and businesses. So what you're seeing is they literally did this just to get money in the banks and facilitate lending in the banks. That's what this was for. And how do you do that? You relax the need for banks to hold treasury securities. Therefore, the temporary increase in leverage exposure capacity should also have countercyclical benefits as it supports financial market liquidity and increases the banking organization's lending capacities in a time of unprecedented economic disaster. Now, the stock market rally. How did all the, remember, credit lines. Well, what's a big credit line? Oh, margin accounts. Oh, we're gonna let people borrow a bunch of money and buy stocks. So you can see here, this is a great piece from Advisor Perspective. You see the market dropped a bunch and so did margin accounts as people got flushed out. And then because of all this money due to the Fed, the stock market didn't rally just on people wanting to buy stocks. No, it rallied because people got their stimulus checks and figured out that they could borrow more money to buy more stocks that they don't have enough money to afford. And now we have record margin debt and record stock prices, all because of these credit lines were extended. Now, the where this story is going is, the problem is, this SLR rule expires on March 31st. Now, what does that mean? The banks are going to have to start holding more more capital, right? And that means less lending to all these companies who are running credit lines and all these investors out there that are running margin accounts. It's going to tighten credit conditions because the banks are going, assuming this law is you know, Powell said in today's press conference that there's an announcement coming, which we're going to assume that the announcement is the SL rule is going back in full effect. Now, why would it? Because we don't have a lending problem right now, right? I mean, look at high yield interest rates. They're like 4-some-odd%. There's no problem. You want to borrow money? It's out there. So now all of a sudden, the banks are going to have to hold more capital. When they hold more capital and have new rules, what are they going to need a whole bunch of? Bonds. They're going to need a bunch of them. And even, to make matters worse, my friends, there's another problem. Not only are they going to need it because the rule's coming back in place, but what else has been going on since then? A bunch of stimulus. The bank's balance sheets have been massively expanding. Well, they're going to have to hold more capital against that. And here is the TGA, the Treasury General Account. You see how it's heading on its way down as stimulus checks come out. And what does that tell you? The banks are going to need to buy a ton of bonds. Now, what's the problem? The banks have a big competitor in the bond market right now. It's called the Fed, because Fed's buying 80 billion treasuries a month. And those are the kind of bonds that the SLR rule really likes. What are called high quality liquid assets, which translate to these have zero risk and you can sell them at any time under any condition and get money. So the banks are competing with that. So how do you get bonds in a time when you need a ton of them? Well, do you start running stories about how inflation's coming and stimulus checks are really inflationary and this SLR, and you get your analysts to talk about how the SLR rule is going to cause you to sell, you know, hundreds of billions of these things? Yeah. And then what happens? You get a massive selling of treasury securities and interest rates go up. In fact, let's look at what happened. We'll go back to this 30-year rate. So why did this thing go down? Right, because the SLR was forcing the banks to buy more bonds. And then eventually, that led to tighter financial conditions. And then what happened right in here? The Fed restarted QE. Remember that? And when you mix QE with SLR and all this bond buying, yields went down. And look what happens when you turn the SLR off. Yields went up. And let's look over here. Banks still bought bonds. They had to, but they didn't buy a lot, not as much as they could have. But look at that. Interest rates went up. So what do you think is going to happen when the SLR rule comes back into force and banks have to buy bonds because governments need a dumping ground to put all this debt towards? Yeah, you got it. It means what the banks have been telling us, the analysts have been saying, that interest rates are going up because the SLR. No, the banks are going to take the path of least risk. And that means they're going to start constraining these credit lines and margin accounts. And that's not good for stock investors who are margined out their ears buying stocks. Now let's talk about, so you see kind of why the banks were manipulating the market? They needed bonds. And now does it make sense, right? If you look, why were primary dealers sitting all these bonds? They had a market for them, right? They knew. As soon as this SLR thing comes back into play, banks are going to buy more bonds. Dealers got to have them. Why were the banks sitting on these speculative longs when they're getting literally their faces kicked in because they're losing money on this? Because they know when the banks have to start buying bonds again, there's going to be a massive short squeeze and it's going to drive yields down. And we know it happened because it happened right here. QE starts, yields go down. I mean, QE and SLR yields go down. All right, let's talk about the Powell presser today. We didn't really learn much other than he didn't change anything. There's a couple of minor little changes that don't really mean a whole lot to the picture. But what we learned is we didn't get Operation Twist. I was hoping for that. Didn't get duration extension on the QE purchase. Hoping for that as well. What we learned is he is open to those things, but what they are looking at is their financial conditions report. And as long as it says financial conditions are easy, he's not doing anything. He's not doing anything at all. So until financial conditions tighten, nada. Now, the market obviously, But the real issue now is, are these higher interest rates, are they a sign of inflation, or are they inadvertently tightening financial conditions that don't show up on Powell's report? Now, how will we know they're tightening financial conditions? Because consumers and businesses are rejecting them. How would we know? Let's look at the data, and it's pretty compelling. Let's look at the retail sales data, right? -3% in February, went from 7.6 to -3. Wow, big change. Stimulus month before, no stimulus. That's not a positive sign. How about import prices? Import prices. You say, well, they went up 1.3%. Is there 3% year over year? Right, and that's mostly due to food and energy costs going up. Here's the thing that really blows my mind. Redbook same store weekly retail sales month over month, prior month -18%, -17.9%. So what you're seeing by consumers is they're rejecting higher yields, passive utilization rate in factories. You want inflation, this number needs to be 80%. It went down. So in February, it said factories were less utilized, even though everyone's worried about inflation. How about industrial production? Deeper contraction, -4.25%. Let's move into today's data. Mortgage applications, down 2.2%. Look at this mortgage market index. I'll show you this. 20% off of its highs. Does that tell you there's big demand for people getting mortgages? No, what it's telling you is higher interest rates are leading to fewer new mortgages and fewer refinances, and that threatens the housing bubble. You need more convincing of that? How about housing starts? Down 10% in February. Woo! Building permits, which is usually a lead of housing starts, down 10.8. And crude inventories, while they rose, although the market, I don't know why, what we should see in crude is we should start to see consumers reject higher gas prices as well, driving less, we're seeing them spending less, we're seeing them mortgage market less. It's all starting to make sense. See, Powell doesn't understand we're in a liquidity trap. He doesn't understand that the banks are desperate for bonds, so desperate for bonds, they're willing to do anything to get yields to go up so they can buy as many of these things as they can. Because as these stimulus checks hit, they've got to buy more bonds. And as the SLR rule comes back, they got to buy even more. They got to buy a ton of these things. And so Powell's looking at the interest rates markets, looking at financial conditions, saying, I don't see a problem. What you now see in the data, we're seeing getting more confirmation is, higher yields are leading to tighter financial conditions. It's not normally how you would look at it. A lot of people, you're supposed to say higher interest rates are a sign of looser financial conditions. Only when you see lending growth, only when you see demand for them. When you don't see demand for them in a liquidity trap, higher interest rates are a sign of tight financial conditions, and they're going to get rejected. And that's why, if we talked about before, they lead to lower, not higher, interest rates. It should be new all-time lows. Now let's look at one last chart before we go. We got to go to the bond market. Treasury yields up to close to 2.42% today. And here, if you're into technical analysis, this is a hot zone of rejection here. So of course, I'll be eagerly watching the overnight, which the European market tends to be selling, but lots of open gaps all the way through here. And this is ripe for reversal now, as in a couple weeks, as far as we know, the SLR rule's coming back. Powell's got an announcement, he said, in a few days, but my guess, he's under hot pressure to reinstate that. By the way, if you don't think the Senate Banking Committee matters, they do. If you don't think the FDIC, who says we don't want the exemption to continue, they actually do have a say in it. So don't look for the SLR to continue. But that, my friends, that's bond bullish. Anyways, I'm Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being a fan of the show. I will see you on Friday for the next macro show. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only, is not intended to provide investment or other advice. This show is not to be construed as recognition or solicitation by selling security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter, personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that I'm my own do not reflect the value of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.